Hello, and thank you so much for joining us for a really special episode of our Live and Love Local podcast. My name is Scott Parker. I'm the Vice President of Sales and Marketing here with John Green Realtor. And we have a really exciting episode for you. Today, we are dropping our 2022 JG report, which is our market analysis of what happened in 2021 and also our outlook for 2022. And in this report, we cover everything from residential to new construction, and then we even cover the asset classes of commercial, land, and industrial. And so we're really excited. And if you want to find this report, you can find it by going to www.johngreenrealtor.com/market-report. So you can find that and you can get that access to that report. But as we kick this off today, we are really excited to have a special episode, and we're introducing a couple of our good friends who know a lot about the market. And we're going to talk about what we've seen in the marketplace and what our outlook is for next year. So we've got two special guests with us today. The first one is Mr. Lance Ramella. Lance is the founder and president of Housing Trends, and he is a 28-year veteran of the industry of market feasibility and study. He basically has spent his entire career looking and analyzing residential and new construction activity and data in the market. He puts out a Chicago housing market report that is one of the best in the business, and we are so excited to have him with us. Thanks, Lance, for joining us.
Of course, and I think you you found that information 5 years ago, because I think I've now been in the industry 33 years.
Oh, wow, that's fantastic. So even more authority there. So this is, we've got the right guy, right, Seamus? And then we've got Seamus Conley. Seamus is the senior vice president of our commercial company, John Green Real Estate, which services the commercial, land, and industrial assets. We've got a great team on that side, and we asked him to join us to give us some color. Seamus's background, he's had about a 15-year, very successful run in commercial real estate. Prior to that, he was a developer and a builder, and so he knows that world really well. And prior to that, he had a successful career in banking. So he brings a lot of really interesting and unique insights to his clients, but a lot of unique insights to our team. And we're sure that you're going to give us a lot of great stuff here on the episode. So Seamus, thanks for joining us.
Of course. Thank you.
All right. Well, let's jump in. We're going to talk first residential real estate. And we're going to look at 2021 and kind of drive the conversation around that. And we'll talk about what we're thinking for 2022 here in a second. You know, the big two trends that we saw in 2021, obviously, it was a wild year. We like to refer to it as a rapid housing market. For us industry vets like Lance, who's been in it for 33 years, and Seamus and myself for at least 15, we lived through the Great Recession. So we remember what that was like, but we also remember what that ramp up before the Great Recession was like. And people keep asking throughout the year, they're asking me, how does this compare to 2003 and 2004? And I have continually said it hasn't compared at all. What we've experienced in this last year was just completely unprecedented. And I know we've been using that word a lot, but it really was unprecedented. Obviously, the pandemic and COVID in 2020 really set the stage for what was an interesting 2021. But the main two takeaways that I have as we analyze the data were, number one, a lot of people are concerned about what's driving this rapid market, and it has to be demand, right? And what the data is actually telling us, and what's pretty interesting, is it's not so much a demand side increase or acceleration. In fact, we have a really cool new piece of data that we were able to track. And so the showing software that we use in the residential real estate market has actually created a report dashboard that allows us to see, as a great leading indicator, how many people are actually walking into homes and setting up showings. It's an incredible leading indicator of demand over time. And what we found is that the curve of showings in 2021 weren't all that different than 2019. So the demand wasn't that dissimilar in 2021 to the pre-pandemic. What is definitely different is the supply side. For about, if we look at kind of national data, for about 10 years, the last decade or so, at any given point, there's been about an average of 1 million homes for sale on the market through that last decade. I just saw a report the other day. We're down to 277,000 homes available in the residential real estate market in the US today. So what we're seeing here, a rapid real estate market driven by strong demand, right? And we'll talk about some of those factors, but a lot more just an imbalance between the demand that's out there and the supply, the new listings, the new construction that are coming to the market to satiate some of that demand. So that's really what we're seeing as we look back at a really interesting 2021. And Lance, obviously you're looking at a lot of the data at a macro level and a micro level, but let's talk about some of those things that people are asking the questions. Well, what's behind the imbalance of the supply and demand? What are some of those things that you're seeing?
Well, it's interesting. We've had employment drives demand, and that's just pretty fundamental. In 2020, from April 2020 through March 2021, a full 12 months, we lost jobs every month in the Chicago area and nationwide, but I'm looking at Chicago data. We lost jobs every month. And the housing market in 2020, you know, the second half of 2020 was relatively strong. So there was a complete disconnect. We began adding jobs back in April 2021 at a pretty good clip. It slowed and recently we've kind of settled into a 2.5% employment growth rate. Which pre-pandemic we would have been thrilled with. That's about 110,000 jobs a year is what we're adding. That's the pace we're on, which is great. And that's driving now, obviously that's driving demand in 21 again. We're still about 250,000 jobs shy of where we were pre-pandemic. So we've got about 2.5 years to go at this current pace to get back just to where we were in March or February of 2020, which seems like a long way to go. And I can't imagine that we're going to get there any quicker. A lot of those are permanent retirees who have left the market. Some people have, you know, they're working from home or started new jobs and they may not even be registering in the employment growth numbers. So employment is key. And those jobs, you know, they're recorded, you know, whether you work from home or somewhere else. And that's another factor we'll talk about is a shift in dynamics of what people want for housing. So there's been that shift and that's moved people pretty much, you know, out of the city and into the suburbs and some out of the suburbs and into the country. But they maintain their job. They maintain their place of employment, which is great. Interest rates clearly are a driving factor in this. And, you know, if we see interest rates increase even a little, people that have refinanced or moved and they're now married to a 3% or less mortgage rate, and even if it goes up to 3.5-4%, which to me looks really good, you know, do they want to trade that in to, you know, to a 4% mortgage rate or whatever it will be later in this year? And I don't forecast mortgage rates, but I know a lot of people that do, and that seems to be on the horizon at some point. You know, that may dampen demand just a little bit. But as you said, Scott, you know, it feels like demand is really strong, even though if you look at permit activity and things like that, which I know we'll get to, it's still 40% of what it was pre-recession. So, you know, that inventory number you spoke to, where we're running about, you know, 25 to 30% of where we were historically, it just feels like there's a lot of demand. And there is, based on the amount of supply we have in the market. There's been some talk of, you know, income growth that might be driving some of this, but a lot of that is offset by, you know, home appreciation and inflation. It's just getting chewed up. So, you know, if you've, you know, you got a 20%, you know, income boost, well, you're paying that. If you combine appreciation and inflation, that's pretty much all gone. So I don't know if that's driving any of them. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that's kind of how I view it.
Yeah, I saw the Zillow released its home price index today, largest year-over-year gains we've seen in history in 2021. So to your point, yeah, it's really interesting. There has been a growth in income. But a lot of that growth has been chewed up, not only by housing, but just by overall inflation and the cost of goods, right? And so,
and you know, I don't know if you've paid your gas bill lately, but it's about twice what it was last year.
Yeah, no, we're keeping our home a little bit cooler as a result of that. So, hey, Lance, so we talked a lot about demand side there and kind of what's driving that. Where's all the inventory? Why aren't people listing their homes?
That's a great question. Well, the first thing is what we talked about is interest rates. You know, if there's just the indication that they're going to go up, you know, if you watch that refinance market, as soon as there's a hint that they're going up, there's a rush to refinance and then the spigot shuts off. Same thing happens with your house. You know, do you want to sell your, you know, now it's your $500,000 home. Last year it was your $400,000 home, and trade it in. And now all of a sudden your interest rate's gone up by whatever. You can only write off up to $10,000 of your mortgage interest every year. So that's put it, you know, that's harder to do. You know, it's more difficult to move and to sell, because it's more difficult to buy. And then look at that, you know, like you said, there's limited inventory. So if you want to sell, I was just talking anecdotally to a person, they're putting their house on the market next month. I'll have them call you guys. They're putting their house on the market next month and they're moving in with mom and dad, with their parents, because there's no inventory. There's nothing to buy in the market, which is, you know, we're seeing that. So they're selling and they're future buyers, but they're not current buyers. There's just, people don't have the incentive to move. You know, like I said, the cost is different and there's nothing to buy.
Yeah.
So you think it's propping up the rental market, Lance?
I think absolutely it's propping up the rental market. You know, there, you know, you look at the numbers in Chicago of how many new apartments are entering the market versus new homes. You know, it's totally flip-flop. This market used to be about 2/3 single family, 1/3 multifamily, and it's completely flipped. It's now 2/3 multifamily and 1/3 single family. And that's, you know, it's, and those aren't condos. Those are, those are rental units. So yes, we're seeing that.
Yeah. I'd love to sell, Scott. Yes. I know my home's appreciated by 15%, but where do I go? Right. That's the, that psychological, bottleneck is a real thing. And, you know, it's interesting because it's caused us as an organization to think a lot about, how do we help our clients figure that out? And, one of the things that we're, a trend that's emerging, we launched our Buy First program, a few months ago, a really innovative kind of modern bridge loan, if you will, that allows our clients that have some equity in their home to be able to tap into that, become non-contingent, go out and compete in a rapid housing market, but make themselves to put themselves in a position to be able to buy before they have to sell, and to help us kind of just kind of create that inventory and kind of undo the bottleneck. It's a very interesting thing. So we talked, let's shift gears here a little bit. So let's talk about 2022 and the outlook of what we see, you know, all the data that we're watching in the, our best prediction and, you know, watch this video in 12 months. And I guarantee we're probably at least 50% wrong. but, we are forecasting a very similar year. What we do know, early returns here, looking at the first 3 weeks of showing activity and demand, a lot of our forward-looking indicators, some of the things that we can watch, some of the advertising, some of our website hits, what people searching online, all of that stuff is up, and it's up pretty significantly. So we know that the demand is out there, and we've already seen through 3 weeks this year that supply is definitely going to be a challenge. So we anticipate that 2022, when it all shakes out, will look very much like 2021 did. But the caveat is we're going to watch interest rates very closely. You know, it's funny. So Lance, you've been in it for 33 years. You know, Seamus and I have been in the industry for long enough. We're all kind of chuckling when we hear interest rates going to 4%, right? We all know what we or our parents paid in an interest rate, but those little relative bumps, they do make a difference. And it does look like everybody is, you know, we've already seen some acceleration in interest rates through the first part of this year already. We're going to watch that closely. But I think what people probably anticipate is that if interest goes up, affordability comes down, and that could slow things down. And that probably is the case over time. But in the beginning cycle of interest rates going up, we're going to watch maybe some increased urgency as buyers who are in the marketplace don't want to, they're seeing it, they're seeing the movement up. And so we're probably creating even a little bit more demand in the meantime, as more and more people are trying to get in before interest rates do go up. So definitely going to be the big caveat that we're gonna watch there. You guys have any other thoughts on what the residential market might bring for 2022?
No, I agree with you. Watch the refinance market, and you know, that's very sensitive to interest rate fluctuations. So as soon as there's a hint of it, there's a big rush. And then when it goes up a quarter point, then it shuts off for a while and then demand rebuilds. So that's a kind of a leading indicator of that demand is the refinance market. But I agree with you, and also creates a huge opportunity for new home builders. There's not a lot of resale activity, you know, inventory out there. Shoot, I'm going to build as many specs as I can. And, you know, then that, you know, I know we're going to talk about new homes in a minute, but, you know, it just creates a lot of demand from home builders to find lots and develop lots. And we're going to see a lot of that in 22.
Along those lines, Lance, you know, not just the urgency created by the interest rates, but, you know, the inflationary pressures on the commodities to build. I mean, anecdotally, I've talked to a handful of builders that might have had a client on the hook 8-9 months ago who said, oh, I'm going to sit tight and wait for things to correct before I pull the trigger. You know, 6 months, 7 months later, they're like, I should have pulled the trigger back then. And you're going to see more of that if, you know, this imbalance continues.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Well, it's a good segue. Let's jump into new construction. And let's talk about that. And you know, it's something that's always a part of our real estate market, and it's something we pay a lot of attention to. But in Chicago, right, a very a mature market, right? This isn't some of the Southeast, the boom belt, right? And so we see new construction, but we really start to see it show up right now when there is a lack of supply in the market. And in theory, the builder should be seeing that, and they should be saying, let's go. Let's put the shovel in the ground. It's been a long time. You know, a lot of the vacant developed lot inventory that the builders unfortunately had to give back to the banks during the Great Recession, you know, it's taken us a decade to work through some of that that inventory. So you haven't really seen a lot of heavy equipment out in the fields ripping up dirt and turning over new communities, but we're starting to see that. And that's going to be a big thing. So Lance, I'm going to turn it over to you, but let's talk new construction and let's talk about the outlook for new construction in 2022. And I think probably it tees up with the conversation about, you know, historical permit activity and where we're at. So why don't you take it?
So just some quick numbers. I think we might've showed these numbers at the last John Green Builder symposium, but in the past 12 months, and this is ending in November, that's the latest data that's out. The December data should be out any day now. Total single family permit activity in the Chicago region, and that's 10 counties, that includes Lake County, Indiana, and Porter County, Indiana, and Kenosha County, Wisconsin. Total permit activity, single family permit activity is up 23%, which is a huge increase over 2020. Now, you know, we had a month and a half or 2 months of basically, you know, no activity whatsoever when the, you know, March and April of last year when the pandemic hit. But still, it's pretty remarkable to look at the year over year growth. And by county, it's really remarkable. McHenry County is up 80% year over year. Now, a lot of that is driven by one large master plan community in McHenry County. Where I don't know how many permits, but a lot of permits were issued. And this year there will be a lot more. So that'll even drive McHenry further north. But every other county is, you know, I'm looking at Lake Illinois is 29, Kendall's 32% up, Will is 22% up, McHenry's 80% up, DeKalb is 65% up. I mean, just remarkable growth. The only county that's slightly down and even close to flat is Kane. But everything else is up double digits. You know, the next smallest one after Kane is Cook County, the 20% increase in permit activity. So we're seeing, and by the way, attached multifamily permit activity is up 1%. So we're definitely seeing that shift back. We exceeded 9,000 single family permits in the past 12 months for the first time since 2007.
Yep.
which is remarkable in and of itself. It's taken that long, 15 years, to get back to close to 10,000 permits. And I suspect we will surpass that this year, assuming the builders can find the lots they're looking for. And if you talk to the larger builders about their forecast or their projections for 2022, I mean, they're looking at a 20-25% increase this year. So they got to find lots to fill that pipeline. A lot of them are, you know, looking far and wide, you know, Wisconsin, Indiana, other areas to reach those numbers. So, you know, with their, you know, how public builders are, they need to, you know, they need to keep growing. If they do achieve that, which I suspect some of them will, then we will definitely see 10,000 building permits this year, which sounds like a big number, but we used to average about 25,000.
Yeah, it's significantly down. So, but this is the interesting question. I'll tee Seamus and Lance, you guys jump in, but this should be a builder's dream, right? Low inventory, low interest rate, strong demand. They should be filling that gap. So why are we only seeing 25% increase? Why aren't we seeing 50, 75% increase? Where are the builders? Why aren't they putting shovels in the ground faster? Why aren't we getting more homes put up? Can you guys kind of tell us why?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind is they waited too long to get the land in place. I mean, like you said, for a decade, we had so many developed lots supplied in this market where, you know, if they needed inventory, they could pick up a developed lot and pull a permit. So, you know, they became truly builders and not so much a builder developer.
Right.
They kind of had to relearn or restaff in order to become a developer and a builder. When the pandemic hit, they were starting that. And then everybody hit the pause button because, you know, nobody knew if the end of the world was upon us or not, right? And 3 months later, they all looked up and said, hey, I shouldn't have laid off XYZ employees because I needed them to fill my land supply. Now I got to figure out how to hire them back. They started to, you know, acquire sites. Now you have to entitle it because before you can turn the dirt, you got to get the zoning.
Right.
Chicago land market, that's a 9-month to a 12-month process, right? So how do you catch up quick enough so you can actually be putting a shovel in the ground and 5 months later actually have a lot to build on, whatever the timeline is from shovel to buildable lot. So, you know, I think it's the function of they weren't prepared for the demand boom for a number of reasons, but they were set back even deeper by preparing for the worst when the pandemic hit, because like you said, we're all veterans of the industry and 2007, 2008 were fresh in everyone's mind and nobody wanted to go through that again. So I think that was, you know, the real pause that set everybody behind the eight ball in order to catch up and get developed lots. Now, the other factor is construction costs have spiked, you know, leveled a little, spiked. So you need the right land in the right submarket, but you need the right price to be able to underwrite the project in order to eat all that cost. So everyone was a little afraid that they weren't going to be able to pass that on to the buyer. So they'd test that out and let the market flush out before they would pull the trigger on the actual construction. And the third factor is the labor. I mean, it's been a long time since we did 10,000 permits in this market. So there's scarcity of labor here. So now they're back on the bike trying to figure out how to get the labor in to deliver the product. So those are the factors that I see. I think they're working it out now. I think there's enough history that we've seen in the past year to give them confidence to move forward. But like Lance said, you know, I'm on, you know, weekly conversations with these guys based on our position in the market, and Wisconsin, Indiana are the places everyone were trying to get a foothold last year. And now the talk this year is, you know, I got my foothold there. Did I abandon Chicago a little bit? So I want to come back here and start focusing on this market, losing a step here while I'm focusing on my expansion there.
Awesome. Yeah. It's interesting, right? Cause I feel like when you really boil it down, here's the table set for builders, developers, and the opportunity exists. And then there's all this constraint that won't allow them to fulfill that potential gap in the demand.
You know, the other thing is there just aren't as many builders in it to get right, to that number. Right. You know, I mean, how many builders in 2000 were building 100 units or more a year?
Yeah.
And what's that list look like today? They're just, you know, a lot of the publics have left the market. Smaller guys have, you know, I don't know if they've, you know, contracted or what, but there's just not as many operators in the market as there was 20 years ago.
Yep.
Makes it hard to get to that 20,000 permit number.
Yeah. Right. So I think as we look through 2022, I think that it's safe to say, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, it's safe to say that that inventory is building, the developed lot inventory is coming, but it's not going to, we're not going to see a significant impact in 2022. It's likely that over the next 18, 24, 36 months, we'll start to catch up. Lance, 25% up year over year. If I were to put you on the spot, when we end 2022, how much do you think new construction activity is up?
I don't think it's going to be 25%. I just don't think we have a lot of inventory to get there.
Gotcha.
You know, maybe 2-3 years from now, there's several projects on the drawing boards that, as Seamus said, you got to go through entitlement and permitting, and that's going to take 2 years at a minimum to get there. So if we increase by 10%, we're over 10,000 permits. I think that's probably a safe estimate. You know, some of these guys are, you know, I'm working with a builder that's looking, they're a Chicago-based builder, but they're looking in Wisconsin and not in the, you know, not in Kenosha or Racine. So they're moving further away. So those won't be reflected in these numbers, but they've already acquired hundreds of lots in this particular market. So, you know, that builder will, you know, issue more permits. They just won't be reflected in the numbers that I went through. So, you know, that's a challenge too.
Let's talk about one more dynamic on the new construction side, a trend that you're both intimately familiar with that we have not seen in our market, but that we've seen around the country and we know is coming down the pipeline, and that is new inventory, but not necessarily to buy. Single family rental, SFR, is a big trend. We're starting to see some of those operators make their way into the market. We're going to start to see some of those large single family rental communities. Can you guys just maybe start with Lance, and then Seamus can definitely give some color into the local market. But Lance, just in general, explain single family rental and why that's going to be important to our market over the next couple of years.
Well, it's I am very busy working on single family rental usability studies. You know, and they're for a mix of different types of clients. Some are REITs and institutional rental developers, and some are home builders who think that's, you know, the best avenue to keep their crews busy. You know, the challenge with that is at the end of the day, you now have, you know, however many single family homes that you have to manage and rent, and that's a different business model than the one you're used to running. So we've been very busy working on the product. I think the first one that's going to come out of the ground is down in Oswego, and I'm curious to see it. I'm not, you know, I know Redwood is building kind of a horizontal rental. I kind of don't put them in that category. It's more of a traditional multifamily product that just happens to be ranch units. Mm-hmm. But, you know, other products are going to come out that are, I think, more traditional, what you see in other markets. The, you know, Phoenix is kind of the ground zero for single family rental, and you see them all over the place. And I think we're going to start to see that type of model here. So the first one will be, I think they'll go vertical this spring. I think they're doing land development now, offsites now. You guys probably know better than I, but I think that's happening.
They're turning dirt right now.
Yeah. So, you know, it's definitely a trend of the future. It's, if you look at the demographics and see, you know, what the demand looks like over the next 10 to 20 years, it's strong. If their target market are young families, young couples, you know, kind of the pre-buyers or the people that rent by choice, it's, you know, there's an extremely long runway for that demographic. If you compare it with the runway for the active adult renter or buyer, you know, that will probably curtail in the next several years, 5 to 10 years. We'll see that demand wane a little bit, whereas the demand from that millennial and younger will only accelerate. So I think there's a long runway, and I think it's critical that, you know, they look for different things than a traditional multifamily community. They look for good school districts and safe communities. And you know, so on and so forth, good, you know, good access to jobs is everybody's looking for. So I see a pretty long runway for the product type here.
Yeah, it's interesting. Seamus, just kind of locally talk about what's in the pipeline from.
Yeah, you know, I guess my my personal background in the new space, you know, if you had had this conversation with me 6 years ago as a guy who grew up in a construction site building homes, I would have told you that the product type was some dream is like an NFT or something. But since I didn't understand it, but, you know, over the past 6 years, every year that's gone by, it's become more of a realistic asset class. And in the past 2 years, you know, not so much in our submarket, but, you know, all the growth submarkets across the country, it's built into every master plan community in some way. Now there is Wall Street money allocated, you know, was $1 billion last year, I believe, was allocated to the space in some way, shape or form to chase the asset class, you know, 65, I think, Lance, you might correct me on these numbers, but is it 65, 66% of multifamily across the country is institutionally owned, and single family rent, it's like 8% or 9%, does that sound accurate?
And growing.
Yeah, and growing. So you can see where the steam for the growth is coming from. Locally here, you know, over the past 2 years, I've been looking at sites, been entertaining different developers and users who've said they want to get into the space. Everyone's been trying to get their mind around it. The site in Oswego that Lance was talking about, I was involved in the brokerage side on that with a client of ours. And one of the obstacles that I think they've had locally here is that it is a foreign asset class, and the municipalities haven't been able to get their mind around how it works. You know, that's not what they understand as a rental product. So you've had to get municipalities over that hump. The one in Oswego, national experienced developer who had actually done a garden style multifamily development in that community before. So it was well respected. Municipality understood what they could do and understood that they would follow through. So that helped big time in them being able to get the entitlements for this project. You know, you roll on top of that they've got a national capability. They're rolling a similar product out in Arizona right now. And you can see that, you know, a group that has a 26,000 unit portfolio of multifamily is allocating a ton of time and capital to the space. I don't think that means they feel like they're wasting their time in terms of the future. So, yeah, sure. You know, beyond that, we've had a number of sites locally here that were traditionally single family for sale sites. And we've had a handful of single family for rent developers look at them. The challenge for them has been that with so much growth in the Carolinas, Arizona, Florida, Texas, it's far easier for them to fill deal flow. So allocation of capital and staff makes more sense in those markets. Chicago's traditionally a little more difficult in terms of entitlements and understanding a submarket and making sure you're pulling the trigger on the right site. So since the industry is moving so fast and hard, it just doesn't make sense for them to spend that much time here. But when there is a site that works, you know, I'd say 60% of the developers in that space in my sphere are at least willing to look, take a look. And on a handful of them, they see more value in a site than a single family for sale developer does, because the metrics of their underwriting are different. They're banging these things out in a hurry. They're leasing them up in a hurry. Their financing package looks different because they're not paying down one at a time. And they've got an institutional asset on the other side of it that, you know, underwrites to whatever four cap in some markets now. So I think the steam behind it is strong, even in a submarket like ours. So you're going to see even the national builders, Lance had mentioned, they've got, you know, their own divisions outside of this market that are stuck in that space and are focusing on growing it here. So you'll see them starting to work probably a little bit smaller sites, Lance, first, you think 50 units in a project rather than 100, 150, but you're going to see it grow here over the next couple of years.
Yeah. No, it's an interesting trend. One that I do think will kind of reshape and refine or redefine our market. So that was awesome. That was a really awesome deep dive into to that trend. So that's great. Let's go to kind of the final chapter here. So we talked residential, we talked new construction. Let's talk some of the other real estate asset classes. So Seamus, I'll kick it over to you. Let's talk commercial, land, industrial, three three things that we service through our commercial department here at John Green. What's the what was 2021 like, and then what's your outlook for those asset classes for 2022?
Sure. You know, similar to the discussion on the pandemic effect, everyone reacted when it hit, peeled back, said, let's batten down the hatches and prepare for the worst. So a lot of the commercial industrial development pipeline, you know, contracts were either canceled or kicked out or pushed down the line. And, you know, 4 months later, they looked up and said, okay, we shouldn't have done that. It's, this wasn't as bad as we thought. So let's get everything back in gear. Wasn't that simple to get it back in gear. So, you know, the majority of 2020 was people getting back on track. But they were in place by the time 2021 hit, you know, late 2020, in early 2021, the market just accelerated. Industrial appetite for land, for existing product, is insatiable right now and will be, at least from what we're seeing for the foreseeable future here. Cap rates are compressing, occupancy rates are as high as they've ever been. Supply is short, rents keep climbing, you know, debt is cheap, capital is cheap. You know, that all establishes a marketplace where there's plenty of room for growth, both in the existing stock and the new construction. So industrial is, you know, it's the darling. Part of that is because of what happened to retail. What we saw from the pandemic was really an acceleration of a trend that had been happening for years. Retail, brick and mortar was no longer the asset class it once was, other than experiential type stuff, restaurant space. So a lot of the institutional capital that had traditionally invested in those product types was distressed and started peeling back. What we've seen is a shift to basically, I call it from brick and mortar to e-commerce, and that basically is retail to industrial. So distribution space, warehouse space, capital is chasing it, which is why cap rates are pushing down. Land market, you know, those factors are affecting the land market as well, but in different asset classes. Multifamily and housing are in high demand now. So, you know, going back to the conversation we had earlier about, you know, the past decade and how the developed lot supply has slowly waned, the land prices for agricultural land or land on the path of development from, you know, 2019 into 2021, you know, I would love to say they doubled or tripled, but they almost didn't exist 2 years prior.
Right.
Whereas a farm was something a farmer or an ag investor bought back then, it's now something a developer actually wants to buy again. Mm-hmm. So the land prices of, you know, a lot of these transactions haven't even closed yet because they've been under contract for a year. But what you'll see over the course of the next year is those prices are, you know, doubling, tripling, you know, on the industrial side, 7x-ing. In some cases, because the appetite is so strong. Multifamily, same thing. I think the only real distressed factors where you're not seeing a ton of new development, other than, you know, pockets like Fulton Market District in Chicago, or office, because there's been a glut of office space. Obviously, we know what happened there in the pandemic. Hospitality, restaurants, and hotels, we all know what happened there. I see that rebounding far quicker than the office market will, because I think the office market is something people are still trying to figure out. Restaurants and hospitality, I think you'll, when everyone feels like all is clear or the coast is clear, you'll see those rebound a lot quicker. And then senior housing, you know, obviously with all the unintended deaths and sickness that happened in the pandemic, there's some constraints there. Anyone who was living in senior housing who might have passed away, obviously the way they refill is for someone to decide they want to, you know, put mom or grandma or grandpa in a place where they'd be in care. And nobody really wanted to do that based on what was happening in those places during the pandemic. So there's been this big contraction there. And in terms of growth, you're not really seeing a ton of new development that would affect land prices for that product, because people have been able to come in and reposition existing assets that may have been distressed or needed new management, or, you know, a facelift based on, you know, the negative image that they received during the pandemic.
That's great. Yeah, it's really interesting. I think it's going to take, we all know this, but months, years to really iron out all of the either the compression or the acceleration that was caused by the pandemic, right? And that's a lot of what we're seeing, and is still 2022. It's obviously COVID is still with us, and but we're definitely still factoring a lot of that stuff into our outlook for 2022. So time will tell, but it is definitely some very interesting times that we're living through. Well, guys, this was great. Thank you so much for spending some time with me. I think any of our listeners or watchers are going to get a ton of value out of this. But let's kind of close the loop with allowing people to connect with you. So, Lance, if people want to get in touch with you, they want to connect with you, they really, obviously, they probably saw how insightful you are on the housing market. How can they get in touch with you?
The best way to reach me is via email, which is lramella@housingtrendsllc.com. You can also visit my website at housingtrendsllc.com. I would like to say I'm really active on LinkedIn, but I'm not. so, you know, eventually I'll get to you if you come reach out via LinkedIn, but direct email is always best for me.
That's fantastic. I love that you just gave the world your email address.
That's all right. I'm okay with that.
That's good. No, thank you for doing that. Seamus, how about you? People want to connect on with you. Where can they go?
Yeah, likewise, my email address, I'll pass out to the world because it's so long that they'll have a hard time writing it all down. It's Seamus Connolly at johngreencommercial.com.
Spell your last name for us, Seamus.
C-O-N-N-E-E-L-Y.
So S-H-A-M-U-S. Yeah, that's awesome.
S-H-A-M-U-S. Connolly at johngreencommercial.com. Feel free to reach out. I too am proficient in LinkedIn. So if you send me a message, it'll take a week for me to respond, just like LinkedIn.
That's awesome. Well, you guys,
Lance, you can send me an email and ask me where I got the hat.
I might do that.
Closing remarks, 2022, I think a lot more of the same that we saw in 2021. Rapid, almost on all asset classes. Should be a very interesting year. When we get to the end of this year, I think a lot of the next 18 to 24 months will be very, very clear to us. So a lot of trends that we'll continue to watch. And as you probably all found out, two guys that I'm going to be picking their brain on constantly to make sure we're ahead of those trends. So thank you so much for joining us for this edition of the Live and Love Local podcast. Seamus, Lance, thank you so much for joining us. Once again, our JGR and our JG annual market outlook hit today. You can find that by going to johngreenrealtor.com/market-report. We also have a weekly market update insight series, which is fantastic. We spent a couple of minutes giving you a real-time look at the market. So if you go to our page at johngreenrealtor.com/market-report, you can sign up to have those in your inbox every single week. It's just a 2-3 minute snapshot of what's going on. And it'll help you stay informed and keep you ahead of the market. So thank you guys again, Lance, Seamus, and thank everybody for tuning in. And until next time, we appreciate you coming.
Thanks, Scott. Thanks, Lance.